Hi, Ann Arbor AFers. This is co-host Jess Letaw. The pod team is taking June off for a much-needed break. Council is still going strong, and it's looking like June is going to be a doozy, so make sure you pay attention to the A2 Council hashtag on Twitter, Council meeting threads on Facebook in the Ann Arbor Humans Who Want group, and check Legistar to read the agendas for yourself. Even though we're off, we hope you still keep getting informed and getting involved. In the meantime, we're rerunning some old episodes you've told us you liked, with a little context about where the topic came from. Molly, Michelle, and I believe that budgets are moral documents, and that you can be most effective about making change if you understand where dollars come from and the rules around how they get spent. Each council meeting taught us, however, that while we all have a superficial understanding of the city budget, we had more questions than answers. We pulled together those questions, did a little research on the city website, and the result is the following conversation. Here, for your re-listening pleasure, is episode 9, Budgets and Budget Season.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Ann Arbor AF, a podcast for folks trying to figure out what's going on in Ann Arbor. We're here to discuss current events in local politics and policy, governance, and other civic good times.
I'm Jess Letaw, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Molly Kleinman, and my pronouns are she, her.
And I'm Michelle Hughes, and my pronouns are she, her. We're your co-hosts to help get you informed and get involved. It's your city.
We wanted to start out by thanking all of you so much, those of you who donated after we put out our last request for donations. Just in this one week, we've got almost two-thirds of the hosting fees for our whole first year covered. So you are all the best. And if you would like to give or give again or give for the first time, you can find us at ko-fi.com/AnnArborAF.
Mm-hmm. And now, Jess.
Thanks, Michelle. Today, we're taking a deeper dive into Ann Arbor's city budgeting process. We here in Ann Arbor AF believe that the city is better when we're all involved with how it runs. A lot of times, decisions come down to funding. So understanding how municipal money flows is an important part of driving the change you hope to see. All three of us wanted to do an episode on budget as quickly as possible for a couple of reasons. One, we'll be referencing it a lot in the future as we do deeper dives into specific areas of the city like policing and housing. Two, it's budget season right now, so there's no better time for all of us to follow along and get more involved. I'm going to start by giving an introduction to municipal budgeting. I'll talk about the public process, including opportunities for advocates. I'll get a little bit into revenues, expenditures, and the challenges of budgeting in a pandemic. And I'll end with next steps you can take if you'd like to learn more or even get involved. Let's jump in. So I really relied on two primary resources to get ready for today's conversation, the Michigan Municipal League and Ann Arbor's Citizens Guide to the Budget Process. The Michigan Municipal League document on municipal finance opens by saying that oversight and governance of financial affairs is among the most important of the responsibilities of municipal elected officials. Inadequate oversight can lead to abuses, such as embezzlement, misuse of, and or misappropriation of funds, and general loss of esteem for the municipality and its officials. Excessive control or oversight can render your city ineffective and incapable of delivering important services. From the Ann Arbor Citizens Guide to the City Budget, the budget serves as an outline for how the City of Ann Arbor revenues should be spent to maintain and improve the city. The mayor, city council, and the city administrator, and interested citizens and businesses, and they don't say this, but residents. I don't think we should always define people who live in a city as citizens. We should just define us as residents. All serve as participants in the creation and execution of the annual budget. It's not just an accounting document. It's a management and planning tool. Because the city is limited by the amount of resources available, the budget aids city officials in determining which objectives have the highest priority and will produce the greatest positive impact in our community.
I've often heard it said that like a budget is a moral document. This is where you've decided what you care about, you know?
I have to say, I firmly agree with that. Not everything that you care about necessarily has a dollar amount attached to it. Right. But if you care about something, it should in some way be reflected in the budget, if only staff time.
It's always like, oh, we can't do this because we don't have it in the budget. Well, put it in the budget, you know?
That's right. Put it in the budget.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to talk about was you at the beginning, you talked from the Michigan Municipal League, you talked about, you know, that oversight, budget oversight is important to prevent like embezzlement and misuse and misappropriation. And my understanding is that that is not been a problem that has been a serious one here in Ann Arbor.
It's really not. And in fact, recent Ann Arbor budgets have won state awards for their transparency, legibility, consistency, the way that they hold up to audits. No, we tend to not have those issues because we have pretty well-defined consistent processes by which the budget is developed. It takes almost a full year to develop a given year's fiscal year's budget. All the departments in a city contribute to it. Many years participate in multi-year planning, which means that it kind of smooths out the bumps of any individual year's budget. So no, we tend not to have those problems because we have pretty good checks and balances on our process right now.
Right. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, people that have opinions and aren't quite happy with how the budget works, but embezzlement and misappropriation are not the problems that I hear people talk about.
It's really not. We're very lucky in this part of Michigan, in this part of the world, that those are not issues that we have typically. But I will say that oversight and the more people that are involved in the process, the better, the more those odds go
down. Definitely.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about why the city budgets, where that power comes from. It's not a given necessarily that a city would manage its own finances. The authority and responsibility for municipal financial policies are established by the Michigan Constitution, our state statutes, state and federal administrative codes, and our own city charter. All of those instruments, along with case law, grant us authority on one hand and limit that authority on the other. And I'll talk a little bit more about limits a bit later. Here, state statutes in Michigan, state statutes control almost every aspect of municipal finance. So we set our priorities at the local level, but how we are allowed to raise our monies and then spend our monies is largely dictated by the state. A budget's most basic components are revenues, or money collected, and expenditures, or money spent. In this episode, we're going to focus more on the budgeting process and to a limited extent on expenditures. We will talk about revenues a whole lot more in a future deeper dive episode.
When you were saying that it's not necessarily a given that a city would manage its own budget, I was thinking, well, what might be an example of that, or what is a time when a city doesn't manage its own budget? And the first thing that came to mind was the state's emergency financial managers.
Bingo.
Yep. Yeah. So I don't know if I want to really talk a whole lot about that, but I have a lot of opinions about it and not a lot of information about it.
The thing that I was really interested to learn when I was learning about the empowering acts of a city's budget is that it very specifically comes from the state, because the United States Constitution explicitly grants to states all those powers not explicitly named in the Constitution. Finance is one of those. And so our power to budget for ourselves comes explicitly from the state.
Right.
All right. So an overview of Ann Arbor's budget. The total budget, and I'm, for the most part, unless otherwise stated, I'm using the budget for fiscal year 20 and 21.
That's the most recent one?
That's the most recent one.
Not the one that we're creating now.
Exactly. And I'll get into that in just a moment. So the total budget for fiscal year 2020 and 2021, our revenues were budgeted at $510 million and our expenditures at $465 million. The general fund activities, and I'll talk a bit more about the general fund in a moment, essentially these are unrestricted funds, were planned at around $115 million. all of these numbers are most likely going to change fairly significantly because of the pandemic. We won't really know until after the end of this fiscal year how actual activity differs from planned activity. In general, Ann Arbor and most municipalities of our size or larger or even smaller, their actual activity tends to be pretty close to their plans. But the pandemic is just such a norm breaker that we really won't know until, like I said, after the fiscal year is done, where it's going to settle out.
This might be more staff, of a question. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Just one second. The key staff managing the budget are the city administrator, who's currently Tom Crawford, the city chief financial officer, CFO, who's currently Matt Horning, and the finance and administrative services department. City council members vote to adopt or not adopt, but typically to adopt the budget, and they do so one fiscal year at a time, even though the city plans for multi-year budgets. Michelle, I think you had a question.
Yeah, I guess like I hear a lot about how the pandemic is destroying our budget, and I don't know how that happens. So I guess this is more of a question for the the revenue section, but like my understanding was a lot of our stuff came from property taxes, and it's not like, you know, if the businesses aren't doing well or you know, if people aren't able to pay their rent, well, we're still collecting those property taxes, right? So like, why do we have these huge budget shortfalls people keep complaining about?
That's a really good question. And we'll get into that both a little bit more in the revenue section and a little bit more in the COVID section. So
excellent.
Ooh, good question. You're predicting the future with your questions. Well done.
And not with my scrolling down in the document.
All right, so the way that the city's process works, I'm going to step us through it backwards. The city's fiscal year runs July 1 through June 30th. This is unlike both the state of Michigan and Washtenaw County, which is October 1 through September 30th. This is appropriate because essentially we are sub-budgets under those bodies, so we need to report our budget plans to them in order for them to finalize their own budgets. So we're a little off kilter with the county and the state, but for us, our city and all city units run July 1 to June 30th. Our charter requires that the budget be adopted by council's second meeting in May, so typically between the 15th and the 25th of May. The city administrator submits a recommended budget to city council on or before April 15th, which gives council at least 5 weeks to review and make comments and amendments. City units, which means departments and other bodies such as the DDA and the Housing Commission, have working sessions with council in February and March to present their draft budget requests, take questions, and have time to make amendments before the final recommended budget. Before that, city departments and units submit their initial budget requests in January. The fall before that, the fall of the previous year, the city administrator formulates a series of goals in cooperation with city council that are to be accomplished in the next budget year. Those goals are used to guide individual service areas in preparing budget requests. This is consistent with council's role in providing strategic direction to the city's whole and parts. Some of the factors departments have to take into consideration when developing their budgets besides just revenue expenditures are inflation, labor union negotiations, multi-year plans like the rolling six-year capital improvements plan, often known as the CIP, fund balances, which is kind of like a departmental savings account, and the fact that by Michigan statute, expenditures cannot exceed revenues. Budget adoption requires 7 of council's 11 votes. Budget amendments, so any changes to the budget after it's been formally adopted, require 8.
That was a lot of information that I wish I had a graphic to look at.
Maybe we'll make an infographic.
Yeah. I guess my question is like there was a lot of like stuff of like departments are going to do this by this date, this thing is going to do this by this date. What about me? where's me? When do I talk to people and who do I talk to?
So fall is a good time to be talking to your city council member. Fall is also a time when the city typically puts out its citywide community budgeting priority survey. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I'll talk about in a couple of minutes. So you have multiple opportunities to submit your ideas to the city, although typically just one invited one when they put out that invitation for the community budgeting priorities request. Mm-hmm. You can talk to your city council member. Typically fall for the coming fiscal year is the best time.
We missed that time? Like,
well, we've missed, I'd say, setting priorities for the coming year, but that doesn't mean that there isn't still opportunities to make changes. So right mm-hmm. now, it's really in staff hands mm-hmm. to make budget changes or to make budget proposals, recommendations, and changes. So right now is a really good time to be asking questions of staff. So mm-hmm. if, for example, you have questions about municipal snow removal, now is a really good time to talk to your council member, but more importantly to staff, and mm-hmm. find out what are they budgeting for and how is that different or the same as the previous year.
Okay.
So one thing that I wanted to highlight was one of the very last details you mentioned was this idea about expenditures can't exceed revenues. So it's this idea of a balanced budget, and cities, mm-hmm. and my understanding is states too in this country, like throughout the country, have to operate on a balanced budget. So where the federal budget can operate at a deficit and can borrow in order to do important things, am I right that we can't do that as a city? So if we say, yes, we've taken a hit from COVID, but there's, because of that, we should be spending more to help our residents, and therefore we're going to borrow money. The city can't do that, right?
Correct. Yep. And that's one of the reasons.
We can borrow money, but we have to like have the money to pay it back. Like, right. Like we don't have to have it all at once, but we have to take into account. We can't just say like, oh, we'll pay it back in the future.
That's right? True. And there's pretty limited ways in which a municipality can borrow money. Okay. And once they do, what it's possible to use it for. Mm-hmm. So it's much cleaner on the city budgeting side to say, actually, what we're going to do is go into austerity mode about our expenditures and mm-hmm. really cut it to the bone mm-hmm. rather than try to figure out what to borrow. An example of where this has caused some issues is going back, what are we, to 2021, going back 13 years to the recession that really started in 2008. Mm-hmm. The city up until that point had 100% of its liability funded for city employee pensions. Mm. Starting in the recession, one of the ways that they cut back was in funding future pension payouts. And it dropped pretty significantly. At one point, I think that fund was down to something like 64% funded.
So if people retired without us refunding that, then we wouldn't be able to cover that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's up to, I think, 80%. Of our obligation, but it's not back up to 100. And that's mm-hmm. a lot. It that represents over $100 million shortfall mm-hmm. in our obligation. So we have to be really careful in what we cut, not only for the idea of not being able to take out money, but understanding that some obligations, while they may be deferred, cannot be eliminated. And we're essentially indebting our future selves to be able to pay for them. Mm-hmm. I will come back. I'm going to do a little bit more on COVID at the very end of the episode, but I will talk a little bit about how the city is planning to respond to some of those changes. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk a little bit about funds. Funds are typically restricted in use by Michigan law, the city charter, and local ordinances to assure that funds collected are used for their intended purposes. So in a city budget, you can essentially think of a fund as a specific account. The source of funding generally determines the restriction applicable to those funds and thus what fund type it is. So for example, a bond, which is essentially debt, can't be taken out to cover operating costs like payroll. Another example, housing funds can't be used to pay for the water treatment center. So this means that if you're looking for a way to fund something new or at a higher level at the city, most likely that will have to come from unrestricted funds, at least to begin with. So a good first question in any conversation around the current state of things or something you'd like to change is, where does the money come from? And what restrictions are there on its expenditures? the default for almost all city activity, unless its use or department suggests otherwise, is to manage revenues expenditures through what's called the general fund, which is the most unrestricted fund. At the top of the episode, I talked about the total budget. So Ann Arbor's fiscal year 2021 budget was $510 million in revenues, $465 million in expenditures. If you'll remember, the general fund was around $110 million. So it represents, although it represents the bulk of the city's activity, it represents 20% of the city's overall unrestricted funds.
I think, I want a couple of types of funds that I wanted to talk about were like the millage funds that we get. Like we have the park acquisition millage, and we just spent some money out of that at the most recent council meeting. And that is, you know, we had a millage vote, voters approved that they were going to pay a little extra in property taxes in order to purchase parkland. And so then that money can only be spent to purchase parkland.
An important point to bring up because, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Michelle, but a lot of folks, when they look at something like that, they see, oh, we're spending $2 million on X. Why can't we spend it here? Why can't we spend it on buses? Why can't we spend it on snow removal? Why can't we spend it on X? Typically the answer is because it's a restricted fund.
Right.
Not always, but often.
And it's because the voters decided it that way. they voted, mm-hmm. we're gonna collect this money for parkland acquisition, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The other kind of fund I wanted to talk about was enterprise funds. That would be things mm-hmm. like the utilities, the water and sewer and stuff like that, because they like run as if they're a separate business enterprise. That's why they call it an enterprise fund, that like they have money coming in through usage fees and then they spend it mm-hmm. on delivering that service. And so like they can't like take your water bills money and use it to spend on, you know, hiring staff for the police oversight commission or something like that, mm-hmm. because the money was taken with the idea that it would be spent on your water.
For sure. And I, although funds are important to understand, I'm just going to go ahead and muddy it immediately. It's important to understand that while those funds are restricted and there are good reasons for that, those restrictions aren't always super clean. So for example, the Housing Commission, or not the Housing Commission, but there was a local group of activists who got a ballot on, or got a proposal on last year's ballot, Proposal C, around affordable housing. One of the conversations that was had at the council table was how much should we allow for supportive services? So when it comes to public housing, a lot of times we need supportive services like safety, really like public health, and different kinds of public social and mental health. Those kind of services are key to making sure that folks who are struggling to stay housed are successful in staying housed and safe. Those supportive services are a really critical component to a housing budget. But the question is, how much of a housing millage, quote unquote, do we put towards physically building housing? And how much do we spend towards making sure that people who are housed are successful staying that way? So it's just one of those things where it's both clear cut and sometimes hard to draw lines.
Well, the way I remember that conversation was that it was, that was a decision about how they were going to write the language to put on the ballot. So like we were like, once the voters decided like, you know, this percentage of it has to be spent on this and this percentage, but, you know, that's set in stone. And I think the original proposal before the council started talking about it was to just say that supportive services were one of the things that it could be spent on without saying it had to be less than such and such percent. But like once the council got to it, they restricted it to some number of percent, like 20 or 25, something like that. Mm-hmm. They said, and so that was put in the ballot, and that was put on the ballot. The voters approved it. And so now we have that money, and only whatever percent the voters voted on could be spent on supportive services.
Yep, for sure. So those kind of descriptions, like I said, it's just helpful when you're coming into a discussion about something that you care about, when mm-hmm. you're asking about the money, understanding that what restrictions exist right. on either what how the money is raised or how the money is spent is really critical to being effective in advocating for change. Really critical. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about revenue. Our primary sources of revenue in Ann Arbor and most Michigan municipalities, we have what's called state shared revenue, the Michigan sales tax of 6%, of which over 80% goes to the state and less than 20% is returned to municipalities, less in some places, but less than 20% here in Ann Arbor. We collect utility fees and other fees and fines. We levy bonds and millages. We levy property taxes and special assessments. In Michigan, the state restricts the ways in which we can generate revenue from our residents. On the one hand, it's a good thing because this keeps tax increases ostensibly from outstripping inflation. But on the other hand, it makes new services really difficult to pay for. So for example, in 2017, Washtenaw County, there was a ballot proposal at the county level for public safety and mental health. Because since we don't get those funds returned from the state, we did not have a way to pay for expanded mental health services. Another example is the one that I brought up a moment ago, the affordable housing millage from last year. I think one of my frustrations around budgeting in particular, and mostly we're not getting into the dollars of the budget, but Ann Arbor has a high enough tax burden that I think it's worth being careful about when we're asking residents to pay for something new. Why are we saying that we're not prioritizing enough dollars out of our general fund, for example, to be able to cover the housing needs of our most vulnerable residents? Why do we have to ask for more money? I think it's clear that we absolutely do need that money, but because we don't get that state shared revenue back at a reasonable rate, we have to keep going back to taxpayers and asking for more money again and again. We have it for the transportation authority, both regional and our local, like Greater Ann Arbor area. We've got it for the TDA, we've got it for the library. Like it just, I wish that we were a little bit more consistent in the monies that we were asking for from residents. I will say that one of the things that we'd like to talk about is how Michigan's Proposal A and Headley amendments affect the property taxes that the city of Ann Arbor collects and how that affects citywide affordability. It's a big conversation and it's enough to warrant its own episode. So we're going to be coming back to revenues in greater detail in a future episode.
You go first. I've been asking questions every time.
So one thing about the revenues that I think was surprising to me the first time I understood it. So we're talking about the revenues that the city of Ann Arbor gets to do things. But if you flip that and you look at your tax bill, if you are a homeowner or property owner in Ann Arbor, you're paying a lot of property taxes that are not going to the city. A huge chunk is going to the school district, a chunk of it is going to the county. And so I think it gets so muddy when we talk about revenues and especially taxes in Ann Arbor. Our tax rates are actually not that high relative to other cities in the county even. I think Ypsilanti is paying higher tax rates than we are, but our property values are so much. And I just, this is not the topic of this episode, but I just think it's really helpful to be really clear about what we are talking about, which is just that slice of revenues that are going to the city and getting budgeted by the city.
Yeah. The thing that I wanted to talk about was something. Oh, I wanted to talk about you mentioned that the state isn't doing as much revenue sharing as we'd like. And I saw a chart one time that Tom Crawford showed me. He's now the city manager. I think he showed it to me a couple of years ago when he was the chief financial officer for the city. But it talked about how it used to be that we got so much revenue sharing from the state that voters had authorized us to, you know, levy a certain amount of taxes for our general fund, for our general operating millage. And we didn't always have to collect all that because we had so much revenue sharing coming in from the state that we didn't need all the money that voters had approved. But since then, the amount of revenue sharing that we've been getting from the state has been decreasing. And so now, yeah, we need all the money that the voters approved and more in order to do what we need.
One of the things that I saw in preparing for today was that the Michigan Municipal League had prepared a report showing that between 2001 and 2014, all Michigan municipalities had lost out in over $1 billion of revenue sharing from those taxes collected. Now, 7 years later, we're probably not knocking on $2 billion, but pretty close. And that's huge. Like if we're thinking the things that we've talked about municipal snow removal, about housing, about community safety outside of policing, about these wish list items, if we had those dollars, it would be easier to prioritize them. Whereas right now it feels like not only a zero sum game, but it's the Hunger Games, right? Like we have to take away from something else that we care about in order to fund something at a greater level or fund something new. This is definitely an opportunity where we could be doing better.
And that piece for me was it really helped me understand because I have not understood for so long why Ann Arbor, like as a city, feels kind of broke when you look around at just our infrastructure, the state of our roads, the state of, you know, things that it feels like things should be nicer here, given we think of it as such a wealthy community. We have the university. People really love Ann Arbor and we think of, like, people talk about what an incredible place it is. But I look at other cities and towns around the state and some of the other wealthy towns that are smaller are able to do a lot more because Ann Arbor is pretty big and we're not, and it's that money from the state that's missing. Like, that's what I couldn't figure out. Like, why don't we seem to ever have enough to plow the roads? And it's that missing state money.
Mm-hmm. I wish I understood more about the missing state money. Like, why are they not sharing it with us? Is it because they don't have it or because
I mean, honestly, I'm not going to say that this is a totally uninformed comment, but I typically like to talk to people before answering questions like this, say, hey, I was able to talk to state representative so-and-so and ask this question. But I will say in my conversations with the Chamber of Commerce, state representatives from a while ago, that the state tends to use those revenues as a slush fund and often for education. So if they can't find a way to fund something, they pull from the shared revenues. And so when municipalities start agitating and saying, we really need those monies, the state says, maybe not super nice things back, like, okay, which schools do you want to take it from? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's the conversation that we need to be having, but I agree with you. I'd like to learn more. Maybe we'll do a future deeper dive on revenue sharing. That'd be super interesting.
But yeah,
I think it's definitely the lowest hanging fruit on how we can get more resources for our community without asking residents to be the ones to share it.
Right. And I think one difference too is that the money that would come from state revenue sharing comes from income tax instead of property tax.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And that would be, so that's a little different. Mm-hmm. All right.
So moving on to expenditures, when the budget is adopted, it goes into effect for the fiscal year, which again is July 1 to June 30th. But in Ann Arbor, expenditures over $25,000 are still required to come back to City Council for approval, meaning many costs have to be approved twice. You often see these show up on a city council meeting's consent agenda because it's typically assumed that an expenditure that conforms with the adopted budget means it gets a rubber stamp approval. That isn't always the case. Even since we've been doing this podcast, a lot of times we see budget items in the consent agenda pulled out of that as agenda items by council members because they'd like to ask more questions about electric vehicles for the city's fleet, for example, or how data storing is working and whether it's being used for facial recognition. things like that. But it does mean that there is a little bit more overhead on financial decisions than perhaps necessarily needs to be there. I also wanted to call out, because we talk a lot about police budget and our next deeper dive is going to be on the police, that over a third of our general fund expenditures go to police and fire. I believe the police budget in Ann Arbor is around $30 million, give or take a couple million.
That sounds about right.
So on the city's debt, I won't spend a whole lot of time on this, but I'll just note that the city does have the ability and the responsibility to take on debt like bonds to finance large projects. Two examples from the last decade include the Library Lane parking structure, all that below ground parking, and the court and police building attached to City Hall. And we also talked about a little bit about the city's unfunded pension plan. So this isn't exactly debt, it's an unfunded obligation, but we do need to find a way to cover those obligations. So Michelle, you've had some questions about what it means to budget in COVID times. One response that we're seeing is that the city administrator, which is functionally the city's manager, has asked all departments to make an at least 5% reduction in their planned expenditures for the coming fiscal year. Servicing our debt obligations is an extremely high priority and those won't be affected. So anything that essentially has to do with maintaining our good professional and governmental standing with other agencies, none of that will be affected. You talked a little bit about why are funds going to be affected in a pandemic? Like, what about our revenue is sensitive to the economy? That state shared revenue is a huge one, because it's predicated on a sales tax and consumer activity has gone down so far, but also we don't yet know how far it's going to fall and how long after this vaccine rollout it's going to persist. That's a very unreliable source.
I guess I had a hard time figuring out like how big a thing that would be, because I heard that the revenue sharing was decreasing. So I'm just kind of like, how much has it decreased? Like how much of our budget is that versus?
The revenue shared, I believe I saw for the last fiscal year, so not this current one, but 2019, 2020, was in the neighborhood of $11 or $12 million. So that's approximately 10% of our general fund.
Okay.
It obviously won't go all the way away. It'll be impacted. But if that goes down to $5 million, then that's approximately the 5% just of the general fund, not of the overall budget.
Right.
I think, and I know we want to be careful with guesses, especially in a technical area like this, but I think one of the concerns is we actually don't know what's going to happen with our property values. Residential in Ann Arbor is probably going to stay pretty stable, but office and commercial, not necessarily. And there is a concern that that hasn't yet bottomed out. So I'm imagining that the 5% over the top decrease is a way of getting ahead, getting out in front of any potential disasters in the next couple of years. We make the disclosure every now and then that the bodies that we sit on are not, we're not speaking for any of those. I'm a DDA board member. I'm not speaking for the board. But I do know that in looking at our revenue projections for the next 4 years, we still don't see us returning back to baseline, even not within 4 years. So it's good to be careful.
And there are other revenue streams too, aside from taxes. So there's property values, which we think are probably going to go down, but also things like parking, things like fines, various kinds of fines. The city, like a lot of places, has basically gotten rid of late fees during the pandemic. I don't know how much of a thing late fees are in our budget, but they all like add up all the different kinds of fines and fees. We stopped parking enforcement. Like there were no parking fines. So not just the regular parking revenue, but the parking ticket revenue, all of that stopped for several months. I think we're now charging for parking again, but I don't know, Jess, do you?
We're back charging for parking and we're back at 100%. The challenge is because so many people are working from home, we still haven't come back to 50% of parking activity. So while the rates are back, the activity isn't.
Right.
But the parking money, Well, I guess some of that does go to the city, doesn't it? I was thinking it mostly goes to funding the parking system, but.
Right. 20% of gross revenues go to the city. And mm-hmm. we also help service the debt on the court building to the tune of about, I think, $500,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And that comes from parking as well.
Mm-hmm. So Jess, as you were doing the research for this episode, was there anything that really surprised you?
Man, that's a good question. The one thing that surprised me, it's like a mirror image of each other. I loved that there were some resources that made it really easy to get into the budget. The Citizen's Guide to the Budget Process for Ann Arbor, we're going to drop a link in the show notes. So helpful, like really, really helpful. But it's best if you come at it having absolutely no questions whatsoever. If you come at it with enough information to be dangerous and you're like, okay, so for example, I'd like to understand how parking enforcement fees factor into our city budget, that's actually more difficult to find. And it's not because they make it hard, it's because the way that they summarize the information is rarely the way that you're looking for it, rarely answers the question that you have. So at that point, you have to actually get into the budget document itself, which is 458 pages of total Turner. No, it's not. It's so dry, but it is really fun. Like, especially once you get into the amendments, it's just, it is an interesting conversation. Michelle said at the top of the episode, a budget is a moral document. If you read it with that eye, it actually is a real page turner, because you get a super good sense of what Ann Arbor cares about from the way that we talk about our money and the way that we spend it. So I was surprised by how easy it was to access some information and how hard it was to parse it. So that's Ann Arbor Budgeting 101, really. We covered the basics of the public process, revenues and expenditures, and some challenges related to the pandemic. If you'd like to take it a little further on your own, we'll drop some links in the show notes. First up, in just a couple of days, the city's very next work session on February 2021 is on the coming year, fiscal year 21-22 budget, including the general fund, community services, fire, police, and the 15th District Court. The last community budget survey results were just published last month, so you could take a look at that and find out what folks are finding important right now. For myself, I loved seeing that of the top 15 priorities, I think either 6 or 9 had to do with housing and affordability, so that feels awesome to me. You can also take a look at the Citizen Guide to Finance and Budget. Still think we should call it a resident guide. Don't think we should be constraining it to citizens. And you can also talk to your neighbors and in your local community organizers about what they're hopeful for in this budget season. What are they hoping changes? What do they want to see funded more of? And what do they see funded less of? So I'm going to pass the mic to Molly and Michelle and ask you that question. What are you hopeful for?
First, I wanted to note, I think we got a little garbled with the date of the city's work session is Monday, February 8th, 2021. That's when the city council is going to be talking about budget. The staff is going to be talking to the council about the budget. You can tune in.
You can tune in. We'll put a link to that meeting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. What are we hopeful for in the budget?
That's right. What's your wish list?
Do you want to go, Molly? I saw you wrote some notes.
I can go first. So, you know, we talked about municipal snow removal or sidewalk snow removal at our last, on our last episode. It's something that's top of mind for a lot of people right now. That happens every winter. We sort of forget about it in the spring and summer. And then
I just can't interest anyone in it.
As a community, we sort of cycle through it. And so this is the moment when people are thinking about it again and talking about it again. And I would love to see us take steps towards municipal sidewalk snow removal. I don't hold any illusions that this is going to be the year we can really get all the way there, given the cuts that we're facing. At the same time, I would argue that some of the work that we would need to do to build a sidewalk snow removal service would make a lot of sense for stimulus money. It's going to require buying equipment. It's going to require hiring people. Those are things that the federal government is interested in supporting at the local level. So I think it's not impossible. And it feels it feels like there's some energy and interest in it right now, and I'd love to see us really move towards that. I want us to have less money in the budget for police and more money for police oversight, as well as for housing and for community mental health. Those are probably the three big ones for me when I'm thinking about, you know, we're talking about this as a moral document. What are our values? I want to see a budget that recognizes walking on foot as a kind of transportation and using buses as a kind of transportation. And I want to see a budget that values real community safety over policing.
Same. I guess some other things I'd like to see. Since you took some of my favorite ones, I'll talk about.
Sorry, Michelle.
I also would like to see us do municipal internet.
Yes.
We have everyone's using the internet nowadays, especially, you know, during the pandemic, and some people have better service than others. And I think the digital divide is all more divisive than it has been. And we have started to build a fiber backbone downtown between certain municipal buildings. And I think it would be great if we could start extending that into residential areas and hook people up to municipal internet. I think another thing, oh wait, there was another good one I had just a second ago. It was a really good idea. I'll probably just blurt it out some other time in some other episode.
Jess, what are you looking to see in the budget?
You know, the two that I'm really hoping to see are pedestrian and bike improvements. I want to see bike lanes continue to proliferate across the city. I want to see us continue to take those two things, bike lanes and sidewalks, seriously as transportation infrastructure. We just don't. And I wish we did. The Ann Arbor that I think that I live in is a city that takes those seriously as transportation infrastructure. And so I'd love to see a greater budget priority on those two things. And then housing, but I'm actually not asking for anything new. I'm just super excited about the millage funds that are going to come in. I think they estimated something like $6.4 million per year over the next 20 years. That's enough to get a fair amount of work done. And so I'm excited to see new plans coming out of the Housing Commission, new work plans, strategic plans. I would really love to see, I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I'm sure I'll do it again. I really want to see a 10 or a 20 year housing plan from City Council, not just at the lowest, absolute lowest levels of income and highest levels of inaffordability, but for all of us. Like we know that affording Ann Arbor is a challenge for almost all of us. And I think that there are things that we could do first at a policy level and then at the budget level to help ease that pain. So I want to see the Housing Commission take a lead based on the millage that they just got approved. But following that in the next couple of years, I'm really excited to see what we can do for more people in Ann Arbor. So those are our budget priorities.
I remember the one I was going to say. So, yeah. Okay. This one might be a little out there, but it makes me sad that, and also mad, that during the pandemic, all the essential workers still need to get to their jobs, but the bus system has like slowed down and they've cut routes, they've cut times. And so now our essential workers are having a hard time getting around. And I'm sad that that's happened. I think we need to increase our bus service during the pandemic times because people need additional help. And I think part of the problem is that about 20% of the Ann Arbor Area Transit Authority's revenues depend on people paying fares. And so, you know, when people are doing less traveling to work, that means that those fares go down. And so then there's less bus service to provide to the people who still have to travel to work. And so I was thinking that if we had eliminated the dependence on fares, then we wouldn't have this problem and the bus system could continue operating like it normally does. But
so here's,
that is an Ann Arbor Area Transit Authority problem, not an Ann Arbor City Council problem. But like we could just contribute more money. We could contribute more money to it. You know, like we could voluntarily, the city could voluntarily take from its budget to put into that to like bail out the bus service because we think it's something that's important.
And the city absolutely does participate financially in the AAATA. Right. And I agree mm-hmm. with you that doing so at a higher level would be of huge benefit. Mm-hmm. That's a place where understanding the restrictions on the funds are really important.
Right.
Because the AAATA gets highly restricted funds from mm-hmm. the federal government, somewhat less, but still fairly restricted funds from the state government. And they can't spend it on really crucial things like payroll. That's what they depend mm-hmm. on fee collection for, fare collection. Uh-huh. So the people that are actually paying for passes are paying for the drivers driving the buses, are paying for the administrative staff. So it's fine to say eliminate fare collection. And I think there's a lot of reasons to do that, but we have to find another way
right.
to fund their operations if that's what we decide to do. So, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about restricted funds. That's mm-hmm. one place where understanding their revenue and expenditure restrictions is really important if we right. want to make that change.
Earlier yeah. in the pandemic, it was temporary, but they did in fact suspend fee collection for several months.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
But they didn't eliminate their dependence on it.
Exactly. Because no one else was stepping up to right. fill that gap. I'm, you know, mm-hmm. Mayo Pete, I guess now we call him Secretary Pete.
Secretary Pete.
Secretary right. Pete.
You're talking about Pete Buttigieg, the U.S. Transportation Secretary.
I am. Yes. I am cautiously optimistic about this one. This is, we're talking way beyond Ann Arbor now, but really it directly affects us because yeah. there's, in terms of especially regional transit and things like trains, we're just, Michigan is a bit of a wasteland because mm-hmm. of the, you know, the predominance of the car companies. I could go on and on. And I'm hopeful that we're going to get some help from the feds mm-hmm. to keep our public transportation moving and maybe even make it better.
So I'm going to take that and pivot that into my last question, which is, we're always telling our listeners to get informed and then get involved. So we've gotten informed about the budget. What are the three of us going to do about getting involved?
I'm going to watch that work session on Monday. And I'm going to call in to city council and yell at them about doing the sidewalk snow removal and possibly about defunding the police. those are things that I like to do.
I'm also going to try and watch that work session. I have never tuned into a council work session before. Mm. So I'm curious about it. This seems like it would be a good one. And then I'm also planning to go check in with Liberate Don't Incarcerate, which is a group, it's a Washtenaw County group that was earlier on really focused on the county prosecutor's race. Mm-hmm. They have a really clearly outlined set of abolitionist goals around policing and incarceration. And I'm curious to see if they've got, I don't know what they've got going, if they're thinking in terms of specific budget engagement, but that's where I'm probably gonna go right after this recording is done and see what they're talking about.
It's a good idea.
You guys,
what about you, Jess?
Okay. So like you, I'm going to try to attend that work session. I've done council work sessions before and I really love them because they're mostly not political. You know, we're not wrestling over decisions. It's just an opportunity to learn. And so I get interested in the questions. You get to see more of staff in those meetings and we tend to hire smart, informed, relevant people. And I like hearing what they have to say on things. So I plan to watch that work session. I'd like to plug in a little bit more to the Housing Commission budget. I understand at a super high level how much they have and how it works. I'd like to understand how they're planning for changes, both in response to the pandemic and in response to the millage. And I think my last to-do for myself, one of my very last discoveries in preparing for this episode is that Ann Arbor engages in revenue sharing of asset forfeiture at both the state and federal levels. And that gave me a lot of pause. So I'd like to understand more about that and possibly advocate for removing that as one of our revenues.
I was thinking, I said before that before the show started, I said maybe we should at some point do an entire episode on asset forfeiture that's just an hour of swear words.
And I think we both said we're in, so.
Yeah. It might be more informative to do it a different way, but.
It'll be look, so sometimes cathartic. When you get involved is by swearing.
That's right.
So if we have nothing else to share, then I will wrap it up. So thanks everyone for listening to Ann Arbor AF. We're your co-hosts, Molly Kleinman, Michelle Hughes, and Jess Lita. And thanks to producer Jared Malstein. For questions about this podcast or ideas about future episodes, you can email us at annarborafpod@gmail.com. Get informed, then get involved. It's your city.